To learn my teachings, I must first teach you how to read.
Are you kidding me?
I'm sure I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about.
For those who need a visual effect, Colin is running around the room.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Let me spell. No, there is too much. Let me sum up.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Hello and welcome to Dead on Board. My name is Peter Trapani, here with Austin Baker.
Hey, what's up, Peter? Good to be back.
A very special guest. This is the man we've grown to love and hate in our local meta through his various brews of monstrosity. This man has delved through Street Gang to Grixis Shadow and now onto his perhaps most...
Magnum opus.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. All of this jank brewing and it's all culminated.
To be fair, like it's hardly ever that much jank. It's like, what if we put Death Shadow in Vengevine? And it's good.
Sometimes it beats me every time. Every time. But the one, the only, Dr. Matt Simpson.
That's SCG Regionals winner, Matt Simpson. To you.
Yo.
How's it going, Matt?
Good. How about you?
Good. It's good to have you on.
So we brought Matt on today to talk about his regionals play and this interesting deck that I'm happy to hear about. So first, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got into Magic?
So I started playing Magic when the latest set was Mercadian Mass. I'll let you guys figure out the timeline there. I don't
yesterday,
know when sets were printed.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And, I played on and off, mostly online via Apprentice, which is a precursor to Magic Workstation, if you aren't familiar.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah.
We are, but you.
So at some point, I stopped playing for the nth time. I went to grad school up at Iowa State. In Ames, Iowa, and got up there, found out there was a really good local Magic community, and one of my friends in the grad program there, Karsten Maurer, also played a little more casually, but I got the bug again and started playing competitively. This was Zendikar was the most recent set. In fact, the Zendikar pre-release was the first time I had played when I came back.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, and so I started getting on the PTQ grind, traveling 3 to 6 hours every weekend to play a PTQ in
really,
Minneapolis.
Just jumping right away.
Pretty well, not right away, maybe after about a year. Okay. I went to my first PTQ was one that was back home in St. Louis when I happened to be back home. And I ninthed that one on Breakers, and so really got the bug and kept going.
Yeah.
But yeah, being in central Iowa was centrally located for a lot of PTQs that were still pretty far away.
Yeah.
Kansas City, Minneapolis, Eastern Iowa was the closest ones. Typically, occasionally one would come to Des Moines.
So they're all like within driving range. They're just all within 2 hours. It's not like
three plus.
Yeah.
St. Louis was doable because my parents were there, so
sure.
I could stay there.
Yeah,
we did some
nice
opens there too.
Yeah, not anymore.
So what drove you to be so competitive? I mean, are you just naturally a competitive person?
Yeah, I'm naturally competitive. I get addicted to something and spend way too much time thinking about it and playing it, and especially when it's a distraction from school,
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All too well.
Yeah, that's when it started.
Okay, what were you playing back then?
Oh, God.
Standard at the time?
Yeah, a lot of Standard, a lot of... it was a little bit forgotten in Modern. In Standard, I played Goblin Guide and Standard in various Burn and Landfall decks, Birthing Pod for a while. In a bunch of different forms.
Is that no, it wouldn't have been Kiki Pod, but it had been like...
No, it was in Standard.
There was a combo pod deck, though, right?
In Standard? There might have been...
Maybe not. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
I don't... There was... So, maybe you'd call it combo, maybe not, but there was definitely a four-color pod list that could go from, like, Birds of Paradise plus, like, random Duder to Elish Norn.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. It had Exarch in it.
It had Zealous Conscripts in it. It had Phantasmal Image in it. It had Metamorph in it. Yeah, so it had a lot of different ways to, like, copy your stuff and keep on untapping and keep it going. Sun Titan.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah. So that was a deck.
Oh,
I didn't
play
that one, though.
So sweet.
So what brought you down to Columbia then?
So I graduated, got my PhD, hence the doc at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Side note, the only people in the world who call me doc, doctor, or any form of that are the people on this podcast and local Magic community.
Well, that's about to change.
No one else. Yeah. Yeah, so I moved down here. I got a postdoctoral fellowship at the university in the stats department, so I'm here for a couple of years. And turns out there's a good magic community here, too.
Yeah, allegedly. And you were just like, you know what? On top of all my graduate studies, let's play Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, well, that's what I did in grad school. Now, I should probably do more work at work, but...
You know, here we are.
Yeah, that's good. You got to spend time calculating statistics of hitting X damage off combustible gear Hulk. That's relevant stats.
We did that.
Yeah, you had something like a 60%+ chance to do like more than 15 if you had like Emrakul and stuff in your deck, but the times you didn't do 15, you did like 2 damage.
Yeah, the variance was real bad on that.
It was so bad. We thought about it.
You didn't hit the average case very high. Yeah, they made me do the math.
Yeah.
Or I made myself do the math.
Yeah,
maybe.
It was a fun experiment. Yeah, it was kind of interesting.
So with your background in math and Magic the Gathering, I would assume that it makes you a better player. I mean, we just talked about statistics, but as far as like knowing your ins and outs and when to play what, does it come naturally to you?
It helps in some respects. I don't think it helps the way that people think. Like, people think like, oh, you can just like figure out the probability of this thing and then like, you know. But like, one, you usually can't figure out the probability of the things that you care about. It's just too complicated. There's some tricks you can do to get approximations, but still, like, you're worried about too many conditionals, like if he has this or doesn't, or what was the order of things,
right,
or like, did I have to mulligan? Mm-hmm. And two, you have to know what to do with that number. And like, if I tell you the probability of something is 0.5, is that enough? Is that high enough? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you know. And so I think actually the biggest thing is getting a better intuition for how to interpret the numbers, or not even the numbers, but like being able to interpret like the evidence you get from playtest sessions, or like, you know, how frequently this thing has happened in the 100 games that I've played, and how, what does that tell me about if it's happening enough or not enough or something. So it's far softer skills than people realize, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people try to dive too deep, like you're saying. Like, they just get too, you know, I need to fetch before I cast this, you know, Seer Visions turn 5 because I want to, you know, thin out my deck to get what I want. You know, like, those numbers don't in fact matter. It's much more about like what that Seer Vision will get you versus.
Yeah. It's much more about valuing the probability of things happening than just the pure probabilities. It's like, you know, that 5% chance could be meaningless, or it could be everything depending on what the potential consequences are.
Well, I mean, to toot your horn, I mean, like, in our group chat, you're devising like new and improved versions of this, whether they're better or worse.
new,
or if you're just
always improved,
just trying to meme us into playing something.
Right.
Utterly ridiculous.
I try to meme people into testing cards for me. Hey, wouldn't this be sweet? Tell me how it goes.
No, it was terrible. I went 0-4. Oh, sweet. At least I didn't do that.
Right.
Glad I didn't buy Bedlam Reveler.
Yeah. Oh, man. That card.
At John Anderson.
Yeah. But however you design these things and you're able to play them proficiently. And I think that's one factor is because you've been playing since basically Zendikar block. Another factor is like you're just kind of inherently good, which sounds weird to say about a card game, but...
Yeah, no, I think it's experience.
Yeah.
When I started playing, I was garbage. I was real bad. Oh, God, combat math's complicated? Let's just turn things sideways.
Right.
No, that's a good strategy. Yeah, 100%. So, no, I mean, that definitely helps, though. I've been playing for a while. I used to suck. I still suck, but I suck less now.
Yeah. I think the best part about being bad is learning that you're bad. And that's how you improve.
There's always a point where, like, you think you're pretty good, and then, like, 6 months later, like, I was not that good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, everybody can put together a burn deck, but it takes a special kind of person to put 4 needle drop in it.
It does.
We talked about that.
It does take a special person. That's for sure.
But that's how you learn. You know, sometimes net decking is the way to go. Other times, not so much. Tell us how you got yourself to this 5-color shadow list.
So I was playing the Death Shadow aggro combo deck towards the end that was legal in Modern. Having some success with it, even at the beginning, despite my inexperience. And then Probe got banned, which pretty much killed the deck. And then the Death Shadow Jun deck came out. Turns out it was better, I think, all along. I was really skeptical of it,
Didn't a lot of times your shadow deck kind of morph into the...
Yeah. So post,
it was kind of close.
Post-sideboard, you became a mid-range deck a lot of the times. And in fact, the best versions of it, post-sideboard would bring in Lingering Souls even, too.
Right.
Which, if I would have had Lingering Souls for my RPTQ, I think I would have top-8ed it, but I didn't. So I top-16'd.
Right.
And that was the last real tournament I played with that aggro deck. So that got banned, and I didn't really know what to do. I was dinking around with Hidden Herbalist Zoo decks, seeing how powerful that was.
Yeah, Burning Trees.
Yeah, Burning Tree Emissary. I called it Frogs because they're frog mites. Right. Which, side note, it's a worse affinity unless everyone's playing Stony Silence.
No, that's probably true. You do have some like busted starts.
Have some busted starts, but like you're more susceptible to like Anger of the Gods and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, it's hard to beat that card, I think.
Yeah, in like Snapcaster Trades with half the deck, which is really awkward. Ooh. But in any case, I was screwing around with that, and the Dust Shadow Jund deck popped up, and I was like, oh, I guess this is real. And then Michael Major started just throwing up brews of a Grixis Dust Shadow deck. And that was much more my wheelhouse. I spent far too much time trying to play Delver in various blue, red, and Grixis shells in Modern, which is a trap. Don't ever do that.
Yeah.
allegedly.
No, Delver's just such a trap in Modern. You're missing. So here's the cards in Legacy that make Delver good: Force, Daze, Wasteland, Stifle,
Brainstorm, Ponder.
Brainstorm and Ponder. None of those cards are legal in Modern.
So basically, the legacy format.
I mean, if they gave us like Ponder to go on top of Serum Visions, I think it would be better.
It's close.
I think you probably put Delver and Grixis Shadow. But yeah, anyway, sidebar. So I started playing Grixis Shadow for pretty much up until, I don't know, maybe a month ago, maybe a little more than a month ago.
Yeah, that's about right.
And I thought it was better than the Jund Shadow builds based on theory. I hadn't played them at all. So we have a former community member, John Anderson, lover of Bedlam Reveler and now Nashville native or Nashville resident, who had been playing variants of the Jund Shadow deck and was always kind of like the devil on my shoulder telling me, you know, there's these benefits that you could have by switching over to this. But I bought the mantra that Grixis was better in grindy matchups because of Snapcaster Mage, which is often true.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
And then I also really like Stubborn Denial. Really like Stubborn Denial. It's kind of a pet card.
As a sidebar, I don't remember what I was playing, but I remember you casting Stubborn Denial with no creatures, and I was just like, I can't do anything. And I was just like, yep. And we moved on.
Did you have mana open?
Yeah. I had 4 mana
open. You just cast it confidently. I remember getting someone at a PPTQ. They cast Ulamog with 9 mana, take 8 out of my mana pool, 1 mana floating, cast Ulamog, and I had like a Delver of Secrets in play. Or Ugin, Ugin, the 8 mana dude. And I just confidently stubbed it, and he put it in his graveyard.
Ooh.
All right. Like, that was the best 4 spike I've ever cast in my life.
Maybe he needed that extra mana. He just didn't want to, you know.
Yeah. He realized it a turn or two later. He still crushed me that match. It was a bad matchup, but that felt good.
Yeah. So Stubborn Denial is a pet card. Okay.
Stubborn Denial is a bit of a pet card, yeah. Right after the Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time banning, Patrick Chapin had this Esper Delve list that he horribly, horribly flunked out of the PT with. And I took it and cut the white and added blue and put Delver of Secrets in it, but still with 8 Delve creatures. And I had some success with that for a little bit until people started playing Chapin's Grixis control deck, which went over the top of it. That was my last gasp with Delver of Secrets, finally off that card. But Stubborn Denial was insanely good in that deck, and so I really liked it. And it's been a pet card since, trying to shove it in a lot of places.
One mana negate is great.
One mana negate is insane. So it's so good. Grixis Shadow had a pet card in it. I had been playing a lot of Snapcaster Mage decks. I even played the Grixis Control decks. It was much more in my wheelhouse, so I sleeved it up, started playing with it. But I think the conceit... Or the argument that it's better in grindy matchups is confused because the Jund Shadow list is fundamentally a 5 color deck where you pick and choose what colors you want to be in any given matchup. Maybe only 4 colors main deck, but because you have Traverse the Ulamog, you can just play all the colors.
What a magical card! I remember when that card was spoiled. I was like, why would we ever do this? And just forgot about it.
Yeah,
until it was played against me. When I was
Delirium,
like,
it's bad. Well, with Delirium, it's better than Green Sun Zenith, which is kind of, it's like, it is just Green Sun Zenith, right? Like, you just pay the extra green to like find a creature, or you can find a land.
Yeah,
like you can find a fetch.
Well, Green Sun Zenith puts into play.
But this puts, so you traverse for Tarmogoyf, like Green Sun Zenith for Tarmogoyf, and traverse for Tarmogoyf costs the same amount.
Yeah.
So like, it's a little different. And I guess it doesn't shuffle back in, but maybe that's not always. That's fair. Maybe you don't care.
That's fair.
I mean, it's card's pretty good.
Yeah. And so what the Traverse and the big mana base, the 5-color mana base allows you to do is just play the best cards.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to grind, you just play Lingering Souls, the traditional modern trump in all the mid-range matchups. People can go farther over the top than that. They tend to live in an alternate reality that gets smashed by Tron and Valak and stuff that. But like you can go up the mid-range ladder, so to speak, a little bit and get plenty of percentage points against Jund and Abzan and Grixis Shadow. And then you just get this massive benefit of your secondary creature besides the Shadow being much less awkward. There's no setup cost in casting a Tarmogoyf.
You don't have to play Thoughtscour.
You don't have to play Thoughtscour, Thoughtscour is kind of awkward. It's good with Snapcaster Mage too, but you don't have to play as much air, so you don't have to spend as much mana doing nothing, which is sometimes awkward with the Grixis deck. Though Serum Visions of the Selection from it is pretty good later on. And there's some like nuances to like when the Delve creatures are better versus when Goyf's better, like how many Fatal Pushes, which sort of graveyard hate you expect, like, you know, Rest in Peace just KOs Goyfs that are already in play. Leyline will prevent you from ever casting those Delve creatures. And like the Delve creatures, I didn't mention this in my article, and I shortchanged the Delve creatures a little bit. They do cost one mana at their best. So at their best, it's easier to hold up mana when you cast them, and or like do other things the same turn you cast them, because they only cost one mana often. But sometimes the awkwardness really gets you, and it really gets you against the big mana decks, I think.
They also don't require you to go low on your life total. I mean, like, Goyf doesn't either.
Yeah. But between those two, there's it's kind of a...
Yeah, I guess that's true. But there is a line you can go, you know, end of turn Thoughtscour, untap upkeep, Thoughtscour, or like, not Thoughtscour, but you could just task your turn two and hold up denial, right? Did I do the math correctly? Probably not.
I think you with double fetch, that works.
Yeah, if you have double fetch line, you...
Fetch, Thoughtscour, untap, fetch, Thassiger, and you can hold up Stubborn Denial. Yeah,
so that's a really powerful line.
And then, so this is back from the Grixis Delve days. Then if you have a Mishra's Bauble on top of it, you can do it with Angler.
Yeah,
which is
or actually in the Shadow deck with Street Wraith.
Right.
Yeah. Shadow deck, yeah, Street Wraith. So yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, but I mean, like the worst thing that Goyf is it's just a two mana creature that takes the removal for all your other creatures.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about your graveyard. You don't have to worry about Delirium or whatever, because you can just slam this thing turn two and say deal with it while I just sit on my hand and wait.
Yeah,
for it.
It's the best against stuff like Burn and Valakut and Tron, where you can just like play a threat on turn two. You don't have to jump through hoops. You can spin your mana on turn one casting a discard spell, and you don't have to have like best case scenarios to get that early threat immediately.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's really good, especially against Burn, when you just want to threat quickly and you don't want to damage yourself. Like,
you can
like fetch, you know, like get a Stomping Ground in a swamp and you are good to go.
You're in there. No, that's secretly, since I played Jund and Abzan for forever, your best hands never really involved like Kitchen Finks or anything like that. It was just like discard spell to Goyf.
Yeah, I okay into Goyf.
Done.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That hand's just going to win the game.
Well, and what's crazy is that this deck does that and so much more. So I did a lot of like proxying with allegedly legal software called Forge. And I basically just played this draft and it's like the same 75. And I found myself like there are two different ways to kind of play this deck from turn one. It's either like the Jund way, or I'm like doing all of these like cantrippy, you know, in quotations, you know, like the Bauble and Street Wraith. And
Bauble plus Street Wraith plus fetches gives you a surprising amount of selection.
Like you just get to choose.
It's not as good as having Serum Visions, but it's still like pretty good.
And it's an article, like it turns on Delirium. Like I can't tell you how many times I had Delirium by like turn three max. Like it felt like turn two, I was just like ready to go.
Yeah, it's surprisingly
couldn't
consistent.
We then just play Whispers of Emrakul in this deck.
We tried.
I haven't tried it in this show. I'll just say if you work hard enough, you can turn on Whispers. It involves Thoughtscour, Street Wraith, and Mishra's Bauble, but you can turn that thing on.
All right, well we're in there.
It's probably not as good as other things you can do though.
But no, Delirium's pretty quick, pretty easy.
Yeah. Bauble so, helps. But you mentioned it sort of has two modes. I've been starting to think about the deck as more of like a Grixis Twin or a Teemer Twin type of deck.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So you have this like normal sort of fair plan A, which is like discard spells into creatures, into removal, and maybe some counter magic, which is like pretty solid against a wide swath of the format. But then you can also just cheese them out and kill them. Now, your combo is not as good as it was in Splinter Twin, because in Splinter Twin, they could you can kill them from nowhere.
Right.
You do often need to get some chip shots in to kill them with Teemer Battle Rage plus a dude in this deck. But the benefit is that the creature part of your combo are the best creatures you can play in the format.
Right.
You're not playing some dinky 2-1 with a ability that you can sometimes squeeze some value out of. You're playing like 5/6s or 8/8s. Like, that's just
for
obnoxious.
1 or 2 mana.
Right, yeah. And so the cost to having a combo on your deck is just putting 2 cards on your deck, which is really low, especially in a 52-card deck.
Well, and especially in a deck where you can get lands. So, like, you start worrying about, like, all this air, you know, like, sometimes you just can't find that third land to really do what you need to do. Turns out you have basically 4 go get a land in the worst case.
Yeah, traverse to get a land is a very common play.
It's super underrated, too. Like, well, I don't have lethal on board, but I can traverse, get a fetch land, and then fetch shock my way into victory.
Yeah, fetch shock and then cast this TBR. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of weird lines that come up more often than you'd think. I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. Another common thing is like one lander's fetch for stomping ground and then traverse for swamp. And you have unlocked everything but the stubs main deck, basically.
Right. Yeah.
I think the worst thing you could probably draw there would be like a Liliana if you didn't have a third land. But
yeah. But depending on your mana base, any third land unlocks a Liliana at that point. Some people
all your fetches get black, right?
Yeah, all the fetches are black fetches. Yeah. And the only, some people play a forest, and that's the only thing that wouldn't cast her. I guess you could have like a breeding pool too. So you could have two non-black lands, basically. Breeding pool or forest would be the other one.
Breeding pool would come in for over like the Overgrown Tomb or one of them.
Yeah, yeah. So that second Overgrown Tomb, it could be a breeding pool or it could be a forest.
So as we delve, pun intended, into the, you know, these specifics of the deck, let's talk about your tournament report. Let me know why you thought this was the deck to bring for regionals.
So I thought it was the deck to bring because events like Star City Regionals are traditionally piles of random stuff. People show up with what they have. You know, a few people will be on top of the metagame, but not everyone has the flexibility to switch into whatever modern deck that they like. And it's not like day two of a GP or an open or something like that.
Right.
And the flexibility to just like cheese people out from nowhere with Team or Battle Rage seemed really good. I have to make sure we give Magnus Lanto, Clay Spickelmeyer, Chris Anderson, you know, all these other people have been playing the deck for longer than I have credit because I piggybacked off them. Like, my list was basically Magnus Lanto's list with like 2 or 3 slots changed in obvious ways, given the way metagame was heading and also how much I've loved Liliana of the Veil in all Shadow Shells.
Yeah, you've got three of her in here. Which is more than insane.
Yeah, I think it's one more than is like...
That's one more that I've seen anywhere. But like, I had 2 main deck in Grixis Shadow when I was playing Grixis Shadow and it was just consistently one of the best cards.
Oh, that's
great. It just seems great. The thing is the floor on Liliana of the Veil in most matchups is pressure of their hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The spots where it starts looking bad is if there's too much like Affinity or Coco, you know, if your -2 is like killing a Noble Hierarch or something like that, then yeah, she needs to go. But like if you were playing fair decks, Storm, and Valakut and, you know, Eldrazi, like she's, the floor is still really good. And when she's good, she's insane.
Right. I mean, it's like a 3-1, discard a card and then next turn, do it again. Yeah. Do it again, and then, you know, you get Liliana locked, which is great.
Yeah, Liliana locking Storm is really good, for example.
I don't like the way you look at me. You just keep going up.
Though Liliana is also, like, the most juicy remand target in the world in that matchup.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's
just... I mean, you have to.
Yeah.
You can't let her hit the board.
Well, yeah, but 3-mana anything, I think you're remanding at that point.
Probably. Yeah,
if you're living to... Yeah, true.
Tireless Tracker? Yeah, still, yeah, I'm just going to remand that. Yeah.
Can't do
I'm a
that.
20? Yeah, still just
don't
let that
I
resolve.
I need this board to be clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Storm has like a lot of ways to kind of if you don't like discard spell them or like disrupt them early, both of their paths to victory, be it Empty or Grapeshot, are probably problematic. Like, I think Empty's probably like a big deal.
Empty's tough. Yeah, the Storm deck is also just so resilient.
So
both Shadow decks are favored against it. That's without a doubt. If you tried to build a deck specifically to prey on Storm without going deep on just like all the hate cards, you would build a Shadow deck or something, or like Delver or something, right? But despite that, the Storm is still super resilient and can just like out of nowhere gifts you and come back and kill you, like even when you thought you had it locked.
Right.
So you have to be very careful with them. Like, you can probably make it an easy matchup if you play a bunch of graveyard hate in the sideboard just to cut down that access too. But
Well, just early pressure. I mean, we talk about turn one, Thoughts Ease You, turn two, he's a Goyf. You know, like, I'm not holding up a man because I'm casting cantrips for a Goyf, you know. And that deck, it often gets to a 6/7. I'm not wasting 7 Grapeshot on a Goyf.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah, well.
It's a lot of grape shot to clear their board, but like then you're just going face, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
But yeah, no, that's I could see that being good for Shadow, but also if it gets to an awkward position, Storm can just do the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, often you can do like a mini grape shot and put all the stuff in your yard and just set up to pass in flames later,
right?
Like that's the sort of MO.
Right. Makes sense.
So knowing that Storm is a meh matchup and it's very popular right now in the metagame, you still thought this deck was the deck to bring?
Oh, Storm's a great matchup for the deck. It's surprising. What I was saying is Storm is surprisingly resilient despite all the tools you have. Yeah, so I expected Storm. I expected a lot of random stuff where TBR, Team or Battle Rage, is going to bail you out.
Every card in your deck is good against Storm. I'm just re-looking at your deck list. Everything's amazing.
Like some people will side out all the creatures against you, against the Shadow decks, and that's like that slows them down and makes them less explosive, even though it blanks some of your cards. So it's like kind of fine. And some, if they leave the creatures in, now all these things are turned on. Like it's really hard to go wrong. I also made a conscious decision to not play Graveyard Hate. The main spot where you would want Graveyard Hate is Dredge, which is hard to beat without it. Though you can, again, just Team or Battle Rage them. That's your Graveyard Hate. Make a giant guy. And also midway through the tournament, through regionals, I realized I could bring in Disdainful Stroke to counter the Conflagrates.
Oh, yeah.
Which is actually really important because otherwise it's really risky to go low on life. And sometimes you have to use a stub on something else. But like, now I have five ways to counter these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so TBR bails you out of that a lot and bails you out of a lot of spots where you want Graveyard Hate, like the Goryeo's Vengeance deck.
I don't know, I couldn't tell you the last time I saw one of those decks. Yeah, maybe the last time that I played it. I don't know.
Pretty high variance, I think. But there's an Esper list with like Jace Wrench Prodigy, Obsidot thing.
Yeah. That's is that a thing? I don't know.
You know, I lost to it in the finals of a PPTQ. Don't.
Ooh, well, story for another time.
Moldo Oblivion. It's fine. It's all right. Whatever.
So we know why you brought this deck, and we know what you think about the meta, like it's a meta share and stuff like that. Talk to me about your first couple of rounds in play.
So my first couple of rounds, I played Dredge and then Burn, which was just, you know, confirming everything that I thought was going to happen. Team or Battle Rage was absurd in both matchups. I think I got a little help from my Dredge opponent. I don't know, you have to check the tournament report, but I think he blocked in, or attacked or blocked in such a way that guaranteed that my Team or Battle Rage would be lethal on one of the games, which is important.
Had he seen it before? Do you know?
No, he hadn't seen it. I think it was game one.
Sure.
And which, you know, I don't know, depending on when he was going to have lethal, it might have been the right play for him. But, like, you get some stuff like that. My only match loss of the day was round three against Grixis Shadow. Sort of, like, if you just have a Nuts and Bolts discard into Creature's Hand, which is mostly what you have game one, you have Liliana's, which can grind. But if you just have discard into Creature's sort of hand and some removal, and they have a hand that's, like, heavy on Snapcaster Mages, you're just going to lose.
Yeah,
and that happened a couple of times, and like, you know, I tried to leverage like a massive board state at some point into doing something, but it didn't work out. The best story of the day was, I think, in the next round was Affinity.
Mm-hmm.
Game one, he's at 26 life.
Holy,
that's a billion.
26 life. Yeah, he had Vault Scourge plus Signal Pest going.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
And he on his last turn, he casts a Ravager. And then attacks for three when I'm at four to put me to one. If he sacks the Ravager to put a counter on one of his flyers, I'm actual dead because I have nothing in my hand that can interact, but I have a Team or Battle Rage.
But so you have cards in hand, yeah. So he.
But I have cards in hand and mana up, so he plays around it. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
He should. And on my turn, I'm dead if he blocks anything. All he has to do is block. I mean, I'm dead. I have a 12-12 Shadow and a 5-6 Glaive, I think, and I attack and he doesn't block.
Oh, you just Battle Rage the Shadow?
No. Just cheated 12 out of
plus
him.
12 plus 5.
Yeah, yeah, it's enough.
That's 29. Enough. Yeah, so I definitely stole that game. He did top deck me twice, Savage Lean in a row, game two. I went from 99% to win to 50% to win to 0% to win over two draw steps from him. So I guess he...
Plating and what else?
Plating... And then rest in peace.
Oh yeah, okay.
when Goyf was my threat, and I was also trying to set up for Traverse for Staticaster to like fight his random flyers plus plating.
Yeah, it's so hard though.
Which it's funny that this deck catches a lot of like random hate, you know, graveyard hate and whatnot.
Right.
But it's not. It's still like not that effective when you have Death Shadow.
Yeah, like if you draw the right half of the deck, the graveyard hate just doesn't matter, which is a nice out. Now if everyone's playing Graveyard Hate, you know, and piles of it, you probably shouldn't play either Five Color Shadow or Grixis Shadow, to be honest, because both decks are very susceptible to the turn 2 Rest in Peace or the turn 0 Leyline.
It needs to be really hard hate, though. Like, it has to be Leyline or Rest in Peace. Like, Grafdigger's Cage, you just don't care about.
Cage doesn't affect Five Color at all. It actually impacts the Grixis deck a little bit because of Snapcaster.
Right, just Snap.
Relic can be annoying to play against.
Sure, yeah, Relic's all right.
You just got to play around it. I mean, like, it really depends on your opponent. Like, one, when they play it, and two, when they pop it.
Yeah, well, if they're smart, they'll leave it in play. If they can, and they're smart, they'll leave it in play and just try to keep your Goy small, try to keep you off Delirium. It's a little, I think it's a little easier if you're Grixis to fight against Relic, because you can put them in these awkward spots where do they want to crack a Relic with this Thought Scour on the stack? Because if they don't, you're going to have priority and you'll be able to put a Del creature into play, right? And then, like, once they crack the Relic, it's not that hard to get Snapcaster Mage online again. You just need to spell the flashback. You know, Traverse, you need to get a lot of stuff going.
Right.
But the benefit to playing these five colors is you get Abrupt Decay in the main.
You do have Abrupt Decay in the main, so you can actually... I think you're still worst against Rest in Peace, but you can still kill the Rest in Peace, right? And you can sometimes snag that Relic or even like a Nihil Spell Bomb in a spot that like prevents them from drawing the card or whatever.
Yeah, no, the discard's also great against the graveyard hate, so it's fine.
Yeah, yeah, most of the time. Yeah. Usually it's like top deck graveyard hate.
Or the turn zero leyline.
Or the turn zero leyline. Turn zero, like, if people are turn zero leylining, you should just not play either deck. if that's a thing, like, you know, play Affinity or something, punish them for having the wrong hate.
Sure.
Yeah. No, so lost to Grixis.
Lost to Grixis, beat Affinity.
Yeah.
Affinity. And let's see. You know, I had a sequence of, I don't want to go into too much detail because it overlaps with the tournament report some, but like, I had a sequence of matches where I vindicated the choice to play TBR basically. Merfolk, where you just want to cheese them out as fast as possible as you can. And that's also a spot where the five color version is better because you don't have to ever have an island in your deck besides game one if you do.
Yeah, Spreading Seas, thank you.
Yeah, well, you side out the blue stuff anyway.
Right.
I did. I think I was sitting next to you, Peter, and sideboarding for that matchup. I had already taken all the blue stuff out and like had the watery grave in my sideboard and brought the Godless Shrine in just to not have an island. And then I looked down at the Izzet Staticaster. And I looked over at Peter and kind of had this sly grin. I thought about bringing it in.
Yeah. Like, no, I gave you the nod. I was like, please.
Like, they're going to give you an island.
I didn't, though. I wanted to.
You should have.
Yeah, so Staticaster is probably not high impact enough in that match.
I don't think so. It doesn't kill that many other things.
It's just the premise, the promise of being able to go traverse Staticaster? I don't know.
It's like, thanks for the blue source, dingus. You just want to be able to do that. Back when Standard Jun was bringing Sidraxis Spectre out of the board to be extra Blightnings against the decks that were Spreading Seizing them.
Yes.
Thanks to the island, dude. Getcha.
Yeah. I couldn't cast this before, but here it is. No, so that was a sweet tech.
Yeah, so I didn't do that. I wanted to.
Right.
So Merfolk, let's see. I beat Merfolk. I beat...
something like Adnaz.
Yeah, there's an Ad Nauseam opponent, which is
that about... that's really good.
It's almost as much of a buy as it can possibly be. They always turn zero Leyline of Sanctity post board. They always board it in, and they always have it, and you always beat them anyway because you just make a 10-10 and kill them, and you still have Stubborn Denial.
Right.
Yeah. Stroke as well, probably.
Stroke,
that's fine.
And then I think there's one other match before the last round, and the last round was against another Grixis Shadow opponent where...
Did we skip over something? Might have skipped over something. I don't think so. Rug Delver.
Prowess. Or Rug Prowess, our good friend Alex Edge. Yeah.
He's a madman, but like...
He's a madman, but was sweet. His deck's basically a burn deck. It makes it somewhat hard. A burn deck with Traverse the Oval Wall to find Bedlam Reveler.
Yeah. Oh, man. What? Also, two Delvers. Just two.
There's only two?
There's only two Delvers. Yep.
He doesn't have enough sorceries.
He's just like, I just want two of them because, you know, whatever.
One day, scientists will understand the mind of Alex.
Not today, though. Not today. He does Traverse for Snapcaster. That's actually kind of...
Traverse for Snapcaster, Snapcaster back, Traverse for anything is good.
Yeah,
he's done that. And then in the final round of the Swiss was another Grixis Shadow opponent. And in that matchup, I did the important thing and drew Lingering Souls. Opening hand, game three, was like Liliana of the Veil, Liliana, Last Hope, Lingering Souls, and like some lands and I don't even care.
It doesn't matter what the rest of it is.
These cards are just the best cards in the matchup. There's a lot of people are worried about five color shadow because all the threats die to fatal push, and that's like an important problem in these grindier matchups like the shadow pseudo mirrors or mirrors or versus like Abzan or Jund, like the normal mid range decks. But fundamentally, I think that what matters against those matchups is planeswalkers and lingering souls.
So
it's a problem that like you don't get to sit there with a Tassiger or a Gurmag Angler while the push is stranded in their hand. Like, there's some value in that, but like the most important things are just like casting Lingering Souls.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, is that the definitive answer to why you don't play Grixis and you prefer to play five color?
That's to sum it up in one card. That's Lingering Souls. Lingering Souls gives you the advantages that Grixis typically has, without like forcing you to do some awkward things to go along with it. Like, you don't have to have as much air in your deck. You don't have to like Snapcaster Mage. Is sometimes an awkward card. I've killed a few Grixis Shadow players where I strand them with like three Snapcasters in hand and they have nothing good to flash back. It's like, I'm not going to take your Snapcaster. I'll take this like Liliana or this like K-Command, which is going to take you many turns before you be able to cast it.
Yeah, you didn't have your mana for that.
Yeah, like, and then I have a creature in play or I stick a Liliana or something. Like, what are you going to do? So you don't have as much awkwardness. You can... All of your big grindy things just play immediately to the board, whether it's Lingering Souls or Planeswalkers or something like that. There's no setup involved with anything. And so you get to be grindy like Grixis when you want to be, if that's a thing you want to be doing, without some of those setup costs.
For whatever it's worth, all your threats are bigger than Gattaskers and Anglers anyway.
Yes.
Which is kind of nice, too. Like, maybe they die to Fatal Push, but, like, Goyce is 6-7 most of the time. That kills Tron a whole turn quicker than Gurmag Angler.
Yeah, so in matchups where you're racing, like, against Tron, like, having the bigger guy that you can also just cast on turn two is very important.
Yeah.
In the pseudo mirror, when you're actually playing against Grixis Shadow, the Delve creatures are actually better than Goyf, because Goyf usually just dies, because everyone's got a million.
Yeah, sure.
There's no removal constraints. Everyone's got pushes and decays and terminates and whatever, and Liliana of the Veil. But sometimes a Tasker or a Angler will stick around for a little bit.
Right, but in which case they just hit you for five and then you play a Death Shadow.
Yeah, and hopefully it survives.
Right.
The ultimate goal, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. that was the Swiss in the top eight. I played against
Infect
first, which is another matchup where, like, your deck is just built to crush them.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
It's so hard for them. My opponent took some really risky lines, which I think were 100% correct, just because it's such a bad matchup. You got to take your shots.
Mm-hmm.
I had it every time.
Oh, no.
So they died.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think she played very well. And then
you cut three lilies in that matchup, it looks like.
Yeah, Noble Hierarch. You don't care about Noble Hierarch, and you're going to be minus twoing to kill. You just want to be cheap and efficient.
Okay, you're not going to like push that and then try to lily.
I mean, sometimes lily sometimes is good, but like it's awkward against Hierarch, and like Ink Moth is really the most annoying thing.
No, you're right.
And Lily doesn't stop that. And you can, you know, you're bringing in plenty of removal. I might have sideboarded incorrectly for that. I don't know if I found space for brutalities or not, or maybe I shouldn't have. I don't know.
I think they probably come in over like Kozilek's Return.
Kozilek's Return gets that Ink Moth Nexus.
It can. No, you're right. Yeah, but it's three mana.
Like, it is three mana.
I've always liked Lily in the mid-range decks that I play, but those are like traditional Jund and Abzan, so like maybe there's not a whole lot there. Actually, I love Lingering Souls against Infect.
Yeah, Lingering Souls is good against them.
So that's maybe something to consider, but yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm... You have an embarrassment of riches against
them.
Yeah,
you really do.
In the 75 I played at regionals, and probably most 75s, and so it's a matter of figuring out what the best of the insanely good cards are. And I probably made some wrong decisions. I've thought about it since then, but don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, most of your cards are just good against them anyway, so it doesn't really matter what you're bringing in. It's just all great. Counters Company in the top four?
Top four was Counters Company. It was Bant Counters Company, which I think is a better version of that deck because Spellqueller is good. He top deck cheesed me game one, which was frustrating. I left him with, like, after removal spells and discard spells, he had just Vizier in hand. And he draws and finds Devoted Druid, plays Devoted Druid. And he has, like, a Noble Hierarch in play, too. Mm-hmm. And I have no spot removal spells. I have a Liliana of the Veil, but he's got a Noble Hierarch. So I'm like, well, he's going to have infinite mana next turn.
Yeah, that's bad.
This is awkward. I had a choice between playing the Liliana to, like, maybe in a couple of turns take him off infinite mana and hope he doesn't draw or find, like, the Duskwatch Recruiter or the Ballista. Or I could have taken, like, a more aggressive line to try to kill him faster, which might have been better, but I played the Liliana and he top decks Recruiter and I die.
There
was nothing I could do.
That's super annoying.
Maybe I should have taken the Vizier at some point.
So good.
Maybe I hate taking the Vizier though. It's like a pretty bad card most of the time, but taking the
he had the stuff like Kitchen Finks and stuff. And Collected Companies. Like I want to take the grindy stuff.
Yeah.
But I maybe could have taken the Vizier and like left him with something that was a little better. But have the potential.
It sounds like a hard game one anyway.
No, I think it's pretty good matchup.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, they only have a few cards that actually matter, and you can pick them off with discard spells and removal spells. They don't typically grind very well. Their dinky creatures don't grind very well at all. They're really bad. So, yeah. and plus you can TBR to like cheese them over the top of their chump
blockers. Right. So really you're only afraid of Spell Queller.
And even Queller's then, annoying, yeah.
Even and then you have all the removal Gavinny. For it. So
yeah, Gavinny.
Gavinny's
yeah.
a real problem.
Yeah, so that's one reason why you need TBR to just like finish the match. And then occasionally they can just, you know, top deck the right combo piece and kill you. Like that happens every now and then. That happened then. He also had Geist of St. Traft in his main deck, ooh. which is another way he could have stolen a game. So a little different than normal Counters Company.
Yeah, spicy.
And games 2 and 3, you know, I don't remember the details there, but I remember Liliana Last Hope being really good in one of the games.
Oh my God, she just picks off their whole deck.
When Lily Last Hope is good, she's insane.
Yeah.
And that put me in the finals against Burn.
Just a rematch versus Burn. Well, not a rematch versus the player, but
yeah,
get to replay Burn again, and then we just killed him with stuff.
Game one, we didn't kill him with stuff. Game one, I kept a 5-card hand with 0 lands.
So, hold on.
How many Bottles and Wraiths?
At least 1 Wraith, right?
No cantrips.
Nice.
What? So you're just like...
Nice, we're banking on this.
So this is a 5-card hand.
All right. Okay.
Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, we're in.
Stubborn Denial, Traverse the Ulvenwald, and I don't know, like a discard spell or something. Maybe a Fatal Push. Like I'm not really sure.
Fetch land and...
So if we find a fetch land
you're good.
Our first 2 draw steps, or our first 2 cards on our deck, because we have a scry and a draw step, and we're on the draw too. If we find that fetch land, we can traverse, and we can go Stepping Ground plus Swamp, and that turns on most of our hand.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like it doesn't turn on the stub.
You have Myers, Catacombs, and you don't have Foothills, do you?
Mm.
Myers, Catacombs, and it's either Polluted Delta or Marsh Flats, depending on
right.
Place.
Right, so you kind of need to find the right fetch land, but to get Stomping Ground.
As long as it's not Delta, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And if I do find the wrong fetch land, I can just get an Overgrown Tomb and then get the Swamp, and then I still have most stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like just turn 2 Goyf is exactly what you want against them, and I have a couple of pieces of interaction. And what does a random 4 look like?
Not good.
Like that plus a land?
Probably.
Like that's the best case scenario. So I don't know. It's a risky keep. I think it's right. I bricked off and died.
Yeah.
You were punished. I mean, like it happens to the best of us.
Yeah, I'm at like 40 or 50% to hit that land in my turn 1 between the scry and the draw step, and then another half a coin flip or whatever to in the next draw, and none of that happened.
It's gotta be so weird for your opponent in the finals of the regionals. Just drop, go.
Yeah, one of the judges asked me if I was under any undue influence from my opponent. I think perhaps reasonably. Yeah, but games 2 and 3 did not play out like that. Games 2 and 3, my openers were absurd. Game 2, my opener was like fetch lands, Death Shadow, Team or Battle Rage, and some interaction. I don't know if it would maybe a removal spell or a Stubborn Denial or a discard spell. But like Shadow plus Team or Battle Rage, that's just everything that we want.
Right. Because they're going to get you low anyway.
Red White?
I think it's just red white. I don't think I saw green.
So he doesn't like put himself the 14 off the right off the bat. No Targus commands or anything like
right,
that.
Right, right. You got to get a hit in, and then probably TBR them.
Okay, so it's a little bit of work, but not really.
Yeah, but that was. I think there maybe was a sweat where I had to go for it. I had to go for it, try to kill him with the TBR, and he could have had like a Deflecting Palm or Path, or maybe. But they don't always have it, and they didn't. He didn't, and he died.
Mm-hmm.
And then game 2, my opener was game 3, my opener was just as absurd. It was Goyf, Collective Brutality. I think 2 Goyf plus Goyf, Collective Brutality. Some lands, and
it doesn't matter.
Whatever at that point.
Do you have at least 2 lands? Yeah.
Yeah, and he played the turn 2 Eidolon Which really just makes Tarmogoyf angry in this matchup.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, so good.
So I got to Collector Brutality that on turn two.
Ooh.
Pitch some cards.
Double Escalate.
Like, yeah, sure.
And then play the turn three Goyf and the turn four Goyf. Like, yeah. And it was...
We win that game.
It was pretty easy. I think my life total only got as low as 14 in that game.
Yeah. It's absurd how good Collector Brutality is against Burn. Like, I used to think the card was medium at best in most matches, but against Burn, like, all you have to do is cast it, escalate it, and you're just miles ahead.
Really, against Burn, you just want to trade your cards for their cards in any way possible. And so pitching a random card out of your hand to drain them for two is like trading a bad card, presumably because you're pitching it,
right,
for two-thirds of one of their cards,
which
is great. And it also speeds up your clock, which is also great.
Sure.
I honestly can't believe they only printed that in one color. Like, to me, that card is too good to be just black and one.
Oh, so it could have been like a double colored.
Oh, yeah.
Like a
gold
card. Yeah.
It could have been a gold card, I guess.
Black white wouldn't have been unreasonable.
Yeah, because of the life gain.
Yeah.
The discard. I mean, all the abilities are pretty black.
Yeah, that's true, though.
It's just too good to be monocolor.
This coming from a former Burn mage.
Yeah. Right. Well.
Yeah,
honestly, really, like,
I've hated against Baral, though.
It's annoying so against Baral.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I have to, as a Storm player, like, I have to consciously make that decision. Like, are you in black, and do I think that you have Collective Brutality in this game?
Yeah.
Because then I can't play Electromancer. Well, I mean, it can, but it's getting
risky.
Blown out.
It's risky, yeah. Because against Storm and against Burn, it's really about a mana efficiency whenever you're trying to interact with them. If you get to cast two spells that do something to mess up with their game plan in one turn instead of one, that's huge.
Yeah.
And that's what Brutality is. Yeah. You know, kill a creature, make you discard.
It really feels like once you gain four life off of anything, or you have one more creature than they do, you're golden.
Yeah. Like,
you're not against Burn. That. Oh,
yeah. Because everything just outclasses Burn by miles. Like, it's not close. It's funny that you didn't even have to get, like, cast a shadow that game. You're just like, I put Goyf into play.
Mm-hmm. That was a really good illustration of Tarmogoyf being often better than the Delve creatures, because it's so hard to get the turn 2 Delve creature. Like, you just need Thought Scour. Or to destroy yourself with Street Wraith, which is not the greatest idea against Burn.
Inquisitions and Thought Thesis and stuff.
You can't do it on turn 2.
Yeah, you can't.
You just don't have enough mana to spend. Mm-hmm. The other problem is that you can just cast 2 Goyfs in succession, and it's really hard to do that with 2 Delve creatures.
Right.
So, like, my clock was absurdly fast, and it wasn't something that could have happened out of Grixis.
Didn't even need Tamer Battle Rage in the last one, did you?
No, I didn't need it. I might have drawn it, but I didn't need it.
Yeah. 2 Goyfs is just so much pressure. I mean, you're swinging for, like, probably 12, something like that.
I don't know if I found a bobble, but probably 10.
10 at least, yeah. Like, Burn can only take that once.
Yeah, I swing for 5 once, and I play another Goyf, and they have 2 turns.
Yeah.
And they're going to, I mean, obviously they're not attacking into it. They're not flooding the board and being like, here's 4 Goblin Guides, figure it out.
Yeah. And maybe they're chumping.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Which is, like, fine. Like, trading your cards for one of theirs. Well, not even trading, but, like, just taking one of their cards. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Best feeling is when they play an early Eidolon, and then they later have to chump block with it. Like, please.
Yeah.
Or just, like, burn yourself out. Get me low. Here's a Death Shadow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Eidolon is really risky against the Shadow decks. It's from the Burn player's perspective, it's really awkward when you're turning on removal spells against them.
Yeah.
Because, like, the Shadow decks have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to removal spells. All these pushes and decays and terminates, and, like, if they get to use them on anything, they're in a good spot.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, sometimes you're not fast enough without the creatures out of Burn, so it's kind of a catch-22.
Right. I mean, it is Burn after all. Yeah. So. So I was looking at your list earlier today, just kind of pondering. I'm curious on why 2 Abrupticate and then 2 Terminate. Like, why is there not, like, 3 and 1, or maybe, like, 2 and 3? And
some things need to die.
So the thing about Abrupticate to think about is not Terminate to go along with it, but Fatal Push, because they're very redundant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you want to make sure your removal can cover enough bases in the metagame. And Decay has the superpower of killing, like, Lilianas and, like, enchantments. You know, you get paired against Boggles, and you're like, oh, I just kill that Rancor in response to your Daybreak Coronet.
Right.
Sorry, man. And so that's really what it comes down to. You have 5 removal spells that don't kill things that are, like, bigger than CMC4.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them don't even kill anything bigger than CMC3. The Terminates, the 2 Terminates are a concession to opponent's Delve creatures and Eldrazi and Primeval Titan. Being able to terminate a Primeval Titan, so often you just need one more turn against Vylkit, and
right,
when you terminate their Primeval Titan, then you can get in there and kill them. This is one of the, a lot of people experimented with Esper Shadow, me included, and this is one of the huge problems you have, is that path on Primeval Titan means you probably still lose.
Oh, yeah. You're dead.
I've done it. I've done it too many times, and it's like, it's so bad.
Yeah.
Like, I know you've been playing this entire game trying to get extra lands, so here's another one.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if it's like, oh, I just path this Primeval Titan, but they already have all these Valakut triggers.
And they're just going to bolt you. Like, I've pathed the Primeval Titan and just taken six before. It's not, oh, it's,
And that's flashbacks. A lot harder when you're a shadow deck.
Yeah.
You take six, you die.
Yeah, probably. Probably. Or you have a huge death shadow. One or the other.
Maybe it's a 12-12.
Yeah, I have also, like, just had my Goyf killed that way.
Yeah, that
or
happens,
my
too.
Lily killed.
Getting just, your threat killed. Yeah, it's awkward. It's
really bad.
Yeah, so there's sort of a mixture of things there. The Terminates, the thing to think about with the Terminates is also the Lilianas, because the Lilianas pull double duty in some of those spots. It's hard against Primeval Titan to pick off... Mm. One of those with the Liliana, and sometimes it's hard against like Thought Not Seer because they'll take the Lily out of your hand sometimes before you can cast it. But they do double duty a lot of the times against, you know, the Delve Creatures, Restoration Angel, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, what would you say is your most difficult matchup in the current meta?
Your most difficult matchups are usually control decks that are also packing light Mana Denial elements, like the blue white control deck that you see it a lot on Magic Online now. Mm-hmm. Has Field of Ruin and or Ghost Quarter in their mana base. And then on top of that, they'll have Spreading Seas.
Yeah.
And then they'll probably have Rest in Peace post-board. And then they have a lot of tools to slow you down so you can't just like kill them on turn four or whatever. So that one's a pretty tough matchup. Blue-White-Red can also be pretty tough just because Bolt Snap Bolt can kill you out of nowhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Or like
I always
felt
really
Geist.
Good with Blue-White-Red against that matchup. Like,
yeah.
Even without Geist or anything like that, just... Eventually, just like sticking in a Johnny or something, lock down your threat.
Yeah, yeah.
Then do like burn you out.
It depends on how, like, with a lot of these control-ish mid-range decks, like, it depends on how controlling and how, you know, how far that direction they go. Like, if they want to play a full-on control deck, they're going to beat you every time. And you just have to beat them at the pairings board, let Tron crush them, and then, you know, you can actually beat Tron. So Blue White Red's another problem because it's Bolt Snap Bolt. Grixis Control is another problem again, Bolt Snap Bolt. Plus, they have Creeping Tar Pit. Which you can Fatal Push it, but it's hard to leave in a lot of removal against them.
Yeah, that's true.
So those are probably your worst matchups. Sun and Moon might be super bad.
Blood Moon could be an issue.
Yeah, Blood Moon. It depends on the Blood Moon decks. Like Ponza, for example, I find to be actually a good matchup.
Yeah, it's probably fine.
Because you have a pile of discard spells to put them off doing much to you early, and then you stick a threat, and then they Blood Moon you, and you say, I don't care, I have TBR.
Yeah.
Right. Here's like, this awesome red spell.
Yeah, like, yeah. I really don't understand Ponza as a deck, because it has a bad matchup against the five-color deck. Like, what are you even doing?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of with you on that one.
But I think that's more favorable because we have Team or Battle Rage.
We have Team or Battle Rage. Yeah, Ponza's got a better matchup against Grixis Death Shadow.
Yeah,
that's
what
true.
I would think.
Yeah, that one felt, from the Grixis side, that one felt even to me, whereas with five color, it feels like the five color deck is favored.
The humans matchup?
Humans
matchup. They go wide.
So decks that go wide can be problematic. You can always put stuff in your sideboard to fight most of them. So, like, if you want to beat elves, you can play Staticaster and multiple K returns, and, like, you'll probably be okay. And TBR gets through. If you want to beat like Affinity, like everyone knows the hate cards for Affinity,
right.
A lot of these carry over. If you want to beat humans, that one's tougher because a lot of their stuff is bigger. So like,
Turning Decay do work. I mean, they put in their time,
spot removal spells do work, but it's really hard whenever they play like a few. So like the humans, a typical humans. Like sequence of turns, it's like Champion of the Parish into something like Kite Sail, Freebooter, take a removal spell, which can be really awkward sometimes for you, or Meddling Mage and like Blind Name. I had on Blind Name Liliana, and that was my only removal spell.
Oh, God.
No. Yeah, that can get you. Sometimes they'll Blind Name your threats instead. And then like play on, you know, turn three and Noble Hierarch plus Athalia's Lieutenant, suddenly every creature they have is a threat.
Yeah.
And so many of them, like, the sweeper you really want to play is Kozilek's Return because it's so good against Affinity because it kills that champion, and the instant speed nature of it allows you to get some pretty sweet blowouts against elves and Merfolk and stuff like that. But Kozilek's Return is just not killing much here.
Right. Well, by the time turn three comes around, if you're not on the play, like, you are behind.
Yes. You're really far behind. And even the creatures that have two toughness often have three because of Thalia's Lieutenant.
Right.
And often you have to wait till you have four mana because of two mana Thalia. Like, it's really awkward. So the sideboard plan that I sort of came to is to bring in the Lingering Souls and cut the blue, because the blue doesn't actually do anything against
them.
Yeah,
no, not much.
No, Lingering Souls can chump and sometimes like help trade with something. They have a lot of flyers too between Freebooter and what is it? Mantis Rider.
Right. That old Mantis Rider.
Resistant to Fatal Push, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I've considered playing another team or Battle Rage against them, which can help out because the sweepers aren't that great. But the best sweeper in the matchup seems to be Radiant Flames.
You can actually do that for four if you.
You can do that for four through Thalia.
Through Thalia, if you left the blue. No, you don't even have to leave the blue in, do you?
Well, you bring the white in, right?
Right. Yeah, you bring the white in. Yeah.
So you can potentially do it for four, and you also just want three damage and. You don't specifically want to have to get red. And the exiling is not really that important anyway. So
right, yeah. You just need to get them dead.
Yeah. Like they typically don't have Finks and stuff. And so that helps, but it's still a pretty tough matchup. If a ton of people are playing humans, you probably want to do some major reconfiguring of the deck.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, so shout out to Lewis Kaplan and Billy Hahn, two of some... old grinding buddies from Iowa who played in RPTQs over the weekend. They both played something close to my 75, but main decked the Lingering Souls.
Really?
Yeah. So
two
Lingering Souls. Okay. So the basic idea is
cutting the teamer. Oh no, it's blue. They cut blue.
Cut blue. Yeah. So cut the two stubs. Just move the two stubs and the Wider Grave to the sideboard for two Lingering Souls and the Godless Shrine. And so the idea is that. The humans deck was popping up, and a lot of people were playing it. And the humans deck is pretty good against Storm, and it's pretty good against like Valakut and Tron and stuff, just because it's so fast.
Right.
So if you're not as worried about those matchups, because maybe they're getting hated out, you don't necessarily need the counter magic as much.
Right.
And Lingering Souls is pretty good against them. It's not the best. Like, you really want better stuff, but like... Right. It's fine. It's better than stub. It's way better than stub.
Yeah.
And you also expect people to play like the mid range and control decks to beat humans. Like, I don't know how humans beats a normal Snapcaster Mage deck or like Obzon.
Yeah, or just Jund. Yeah, just Jund, yeah, Obzon, green black decks. They just get crushed.
Yeah, like the reason Shadow has trouble because you start at like 8 life or something stupid. So it's really easy to get killed. So Lingering Souls pre-boarded for them is great. And so shout out to them for coming up with the idea of main decking it. I mentioned it in my article that like. If people are playing enough grindy decks, main deck it. You'll be better at grinding than Grixis Shadow. I didn't think to do it in this mini game because of humans. I don't think either one of them. Lewis. I talked to Lewis earlier today, and he said that he won 3 easy matches and lost 3 close ones.
Yeah, that's about right.
You know, didn't top deck quite the right card. I think against Valakut, he needed to top deck like 50% of his deck to make his Goyfs larger, up to and including a Decay to kill his Liliana to make his Goyfs bigger, or another Liliana to just like legend roll.
Or
Whiffed. And Billy lost to the Mirror in his win and in maybe. In any case, the match that knocked him out, except... Billy was playing main deck Lingering Souls, and his opponent was playing main deck Stubborn Denial. So
that's awkward.
Yeah. So no justice. The Lingering Souls should have shattered him there. But sometimes we don't draw it.
Yeah, maybe that's.
So that's an interesting direction to take the deck if people are going to be playing humans and if people are going to be responding to people playing humans. And I don't think the humans deck is going to be a super major fixture of the metagame just because it's so easy to just play fair decks to beat it.
I think it's really Meddling Mage, like that kind of like gacha thing where you can just name a card and...
Yeah, Meddling Mage against Storm. The Storm deck suddenly had the main deck empty.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're still not, but...
I've seen some main decking it now.
Really? Thalia is a problem, too.
Thalia is a problem, too. You have main deck Thalia and Meddling Mage for Storm.
It just hoses all these combo decks. I mean, even Tron a little bit. Like, if you get to this point where you're like, here's a board state, and you can't play your cards.
Yeah, you can't play your Ugin now. Sorry.
Yeah, Tron curves out a lot more than, like, people realize, I think. And if they can't go like turn 2 scrying, or I guess they can turn 1 map, like then you can't play Karnon 3.
Right.
I mean, because they play Wyrmcoil, but then you're like, they don't have Path. They have Reflector Mage, though, which is kind of funny. So.
But Thalia, like they're playing Thalia. So, like, even then, like, pay an extra mana. Like, you're not going to get that on turn 3 Karn.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have to wait a whole extra turn.
Or, like, sorry, you can't cast your Sylvan Scrying. Another turn. Like, sometimes you just get them there.
Right.
If they natty ice you, well. They gotcha, but
yeah,
like,
sometimes it happens.
That's fine. You also like have good mana acceleration too. Noble Hierarch's a really powerful card, and Freebooter can take let's say non-creature, non-land.
Yeah.
That takes I love a lot that. Of things.
Freebooter takes planeswalkers.
Yeah, no, that's insane. That's great.
So annoying.
Yeah. Nice Ugin. I'll be having that.
Yeah.
It also combos well with Meddling Mage. Look at their hand, take your card, name their other thing with Meddling Mage.
Right, yeah.
You're in there. So
basically Git Probe.
Yeah, no, it's sometimes it's really stupid. I don't know how many times I've died to humans with like my sweeper sitting under a kite sail.
Yep.
Or like with Meddling Mage in play, naming my sweeper in the kite sail with my one spot removal spell. Like,
yeah.
What's so frustrating is it's such a fair card. Like all you have to do is kill it.
Yeah. Oh, it's just Tidal's color.
Right.
And it's all it is.
And it's not like Thought Knot where your card is just gone. You know.
No. Yeah. Right, you can get the good card back. Yeah.
Speaking of Thought Knot, how do you like your spaghetti monster matchup?
So the Eldrazi Tron matchup feels favorable to me, but I don't know, better, you know, trusting other people's judgment maybe puts it 50-50 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, Chalice is still really good against you. You do have Decay, and you can just cast Coif.
Sure.
So it's less of a problem, but it's still really good. And the counter magic's, you're main decking some counter magic, and that helps.
Yeah.
I'm not real sure. I need to get some matches in against, like, a really competent Eldrazi Tron opponent instead of random people.
Our friend Derek play against an Eldrazi Tron player yesterday. He's like a frequent grinder with his Tron deck, so he knows it pretty well. And game one kind of went as expected. I think Derek just like swept him under the rug with the typical like, here's a Death Shadow. Like,
sure, yeah.
We're off to the races. Game two, I'm sorry. He lost game one and game two. He played a Death Shadow, and it just ran into, like, constant creatures. And then he was just able to build up, like, these big...
Yeah, repeatedly chump blocking with Matter Reshaper is a problem.
Yeah.
And they'll find something big.
Well, that plus, like, Basilisk Collar is...
Yeah, Basilisk Collar is a problem, too.
Yeah.
They only have, like, one in the deck, it looks like. Not always, like, one to two, but...
Yeah, there's definitely one in the side.
Ancient Grudge is really good against them. If you're worried about that matchup, keep two Grudges.
Yeah, that seems... probably correct. Kills Chalice, can kill map if you like catch it. Kills Mindstone, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe. If that's what you want to do. Yeah.
Which it's not
kills
what
Basilisk
I don't
Collar.
Do.
Yeah. It kills.
Yeah, kills Collars and kills a lot of things. I don't think you care about most of this other stuff. Ratchet Bomb, I guess, maybe.
Ratchet Bomb. Sometimes they have Relic.
Yeah. Yeah. Can pick off those things. Which
one
is nice.
Walking Ballista. Like just Walking Ballista. Just force them to ping you.
Yeah.
Get them to the number that you want to be at, and that's it. You know? Yeah. But I think game two, he ran into Chalice on one. And then another Chalice on one. So it's just like...
Yeah. Ugh. See, that's a play that not enough Eldrazi Tron players make, is double Chalice on one.
Yeah.
Like, Chalice on one is... This is especially true against Grixis Shadow, but I think it's also true against Five Color. Chalice on one is just what you want. And you might want to go, like, Chalice on two to, like, lock them out of more. But no, you just want to have insurance against the Artifact Destruction spell.
Right.
Against the Decay or out of Grixis against the K Command.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because Chalice on 2 actually doesn't stop Decay. I mean, it can stop Grudge, but like, all right. Yeah,
Like, Chalice on 1 is really... Just stop the Shadow, stop the Discard Spell, stop the Stubborn Denial. Right. Like, it stops a lot of the important stuff.
Yep.
Oh, also, but, like, doesn't leave you dead to Kolaghan's Command if they're playing Grixis Shadow. Like, it just doesn't leave you naked to it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so
exactly.
But to Derek's credit, he did cast, I think, 3 Disdainful Strokes back-to-back. Like, turn. He kept the field clear. It was like... Thought Knot, Reality Smasher, Karn. Yeah. Just back to back. You can't play that.
Yeah, the Stainful Stroke's pretty good against them until they draw Cavern.
Yeah, well, and then you're in trouble.
Yeah. Right. No, if they have the early Chalice and then they also have a lot of threats and you were reliant on getting like a Shadow in play, but now you can't because of Chalice and you don't have the Artifact Destruction spell, it's a lot of conditionals. Right. If all of these things, it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an easy matchup. You know.
Yeah, you know, they were playing Hangerback Walker, and like then like they make a 4/4 Hangerback Walker, and you have to grind through it, and then they have 4 tokens, and sometimes they can just kill you on the crackback.
And they fly.
Yeah, they fly. It's like it's Lingering Souls, right?
Right.
Yeah, so like they can do some things to improve that matchup, but they have to be cognizant of the other matchups.
That's an awkward like you kind of want to bring in K Return.
Yeah, if they're doing that, you might bring in K Return. I'm not sure.
I mean, like, I've seen some lists where they have 3 Walking Ballista and then 1 Hangerback Walker mainboard and then another Hangerback Walker in the side just to kind of edge out that.
Yeah.
If you have it, Staticaster is probably better. Just
Well,
shooter it.
Yeah.
Probably. Put Basil's Collar on that or don't.
Can we steal our Basilisk Collar?
Yeah, I wish. I don't think we can.
Gaunti, Lord of Luxury. We're already in black, so.
1 Gaunti. That's where we're
Entrancing
headed.
Melody.
There you go.
I haven't heard of that card
in a long time.
Is
that blue X?
Blue X. Yeah. Gain control of creature with converted mana cost X. It's a sideboard card for Shadow.
Yeah. Against Shadow or for Shadow?
Both.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Right. I mean, for the mirror in Shadow. The last time I had it cast against me was on Magic Online against LSV, actually.
Yeah, he cast that against you?
Yeah, he took a Lingering Souls token.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. That's fantastic. Did it beat you?
No. Lingering Souls beat him pretty badly.
Yeah.
Not because I played better.
Yeah, just because you had Lingering Souls.
Just because I drew Lingering Souls.
Yeah, and he had stuff.
Well, speaking of Lingering Souls, I mean, we kind of talk about this evolution of the deck, and like as the meta shifts into a more go wide and kind of beef my dudes up human-esque meta, is that where you see this deck kind of going? Do you see any other changes you might make?
So I've been experimenting with a lot of things. I know on Reddit and a little bit on NTG Salvation, I had a bunch of people telling me, but I really love Snapcaster Mage and Grixis Shadow. It's like, well, you can play Snapcaster Mage in the shell. There's nothing really stopping you.
Right.
And so I tried that. Turns out you don't want to play Snapcaster Mage.
You have one blue land, right?
Well, you can play more lands. You can play more. And you would with Snapcaster Mage.
You would change the Overgrown Tomb to a Breeding Pool, and that's probably fine.
Yeah, you change a second Overgrown Tomb to a Breeding Pool, and that's fine. But the problem is that Snapcaster Mage is kind of awkward early in the game. Like, you need to have something useful and relevant to flashback, and you don't always. Maybe you cast a discard spell, so that helps. But maybe not. Maybe you really want to flashback a removal spell, but like you only have 2 mana removal spells in your graveyard and you only have 3 mana. Grixis Shadow gets around this a little bit because it has Thought Scour. And so you put stuff in the yard and also just flashing back cantrips, whether it's Thought Scour or Serum Visions, you can get some sort of value out of it. But it's you don't have those options in 5-color Shadow. And what are you replacing with Snapcaster Mage? Probably the Lilianas, because you can't overload on 3 mana stuff. So you have to cut some Lilianas.
And Snapcaster is at least 3 mana.
Snapcaster is 3 mana. Unfortunately, we don't have Jataxian Probe anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, let's say you have your mainboard Godless Shrine with Lingering Souls, and then sideboard, like, 1-2 Snapcasters. Do you really want the main board all the time?
So, I think you might want the main deck. Like, so the thing about the sideboard cards and the grindy matchups is that you want them to be very high impact. Right. And Snapcaster Mage is high impact in the grindy matchups, but he's not like he's not Lingering Souls tier high impact.
Yeah.
As a main deck card, I thought it was cute as a traverse target.
Yeah.
Because it allows you to traverse for removal spells, basically.
Right. Yeah.
You can traverse for Snapcaster and then kill stuff. And you know that happens sometimes. Like that'll come up.
It's a little mana intensive, but
it's a little mana intensive. But like in the spots where it matters, it's going to matter a lot.
Yeah.
But the awkwardness with Snapcaster Mage is pretty high, and I would just rather have another Liliana of the Veil most of the time. Like that Liliana grinds whenever you want to grind just as hard, and the floor on her is so much higher than Snapcaster Mage, especially in this show.
You honestly, I love that there's three Lilianas because you still have my favorite play sequence in all of Magic, which is just Thoughtseize, Tarmogoyf, Liliana.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You'd be surprised at how many decks that just kills.
Yeah, and for no reason. You also have the other awesome play sequence of turn one discard spell into turn two, one or two discard spells into Liliana. Like, yeah,
and you just mind-twisted your opponent.
Yeah, there's just nothing they can do at that point a lot of the times. So yeah, the Snapcaster Mage, I think, is awkward. And if you want sideboard grindy trumps, that's not what you want. So traditionally, the grindy trump for the grindy traverse target that you bring in is Ranger of Eos.
Yep.
Yep.
And Ranger getting 2 Death Shadows is sometimes just incredible. Like, Ranger get 2 8/8s, and then you have, like, Liliana protection on top of it, slash a chump blocker.
Right.
But it's very slow and very clunky at times. You know, you're spending 7 mana to accomplish all these things.
Have you tried Pia and Kirin Nalar?
Yeah, so P and Kirin Nalar.
That's traversable.
Traversable. I often find myself wanting to traverse for Lingering Souls.
Yeah.
Which turns out.
Is P and Kirin Nalar.
It's close. Yeah. It's close.
The rules say you can do that. It's just it's a red card.
Right.
And the awkward thing about P and Kirin Nalar is you have to get that second red source, which is not always a problem, but it can be a problem.
Yeah.
And it's not as high impact. So the nice thing, I really liked P and Kirin Nalar as a sideboard card in Grixis Shadow to try to fight Lingering Souls and also trump mid-range matchups. But you also had K-Command there to just like keep rebuying it and keep it going and Snapcaster plus K-Command. So it could do a much better Lingering Souls impression. Here you don't have that, so it's not quite as high impact. And the ceiling on it is just not as high as Ranger.
Yeah,
like when Ranger's good, it's really good. Like there's just nothing they can do and you have a pile of 8/8s or something. The other card to try in that slot is Hazoret, and that's what I've been experimenting with lately. The nice thing about Hazoret is that, well, it doesn't require white mana, which is actually kind of important.
Yeah, it's nice.
In against, like we mentioned, some of these control decks with Ghost Quarter and Field of Ruin. They get your white source. You only have one in the deck. What are you going to do? Well, we have a couple of red sources. Hazoret is also very hard for a lot of these decks to deal with. The Path to Exile decks, sure, but you're already kind of overloading their paths, so you can often set up a spot where it'll be good. It doesn't. Its peak value isn't as high as Ranger again. Ranger's really high, but it's often I found in actually again shout out to Lewis Kaplan. He was testing this a lot leading up to the RPTQ and reporting back to me his thoughts. He found that often whenever he had Ranger, Hazoret would have been better. He ended up running Ranger in the RPTQ, but again had a spot where Hazoret would have been better. In my testing, there's been no difference. Every time, really? every time it wouldn't really have mattered because one time it got thought seized after I traversed it because both are four mana and it takes a lot to cast them in the same turn.
Sure.
And another time I was dead either way. But I think there's something to it. And there's also Jerry Thompson posted a list that's just Jund and it's main decking to Hazoret. And actually that exact list. I shouldn't say just Jund. He's also splashing blue, but it might just be in the sideboard.
Sure.
But anyway, that exact list top aided the RPTQ in Kansas City over the weekend.
Okay.
So maybe there's something to it. I tried some main deck Hazorets. Again, one of the things I've tried since regionals. And it's often awkward. Like when it's good, like sometimes it wins you a match on its own. Like you cast it against Jund and they're just like, what am I going to do with my life?
Lily, that's all you got.
Yeah.
That's
and sometimes they can because you just have a random Tarmogoyf or something. But. You know, sometimes it's really awkward. You draw it against humans, and you're like, this card is never going to do anything.
Yeah, no.
I'm going to die with this in my hand.
Right, yeah.
Well, even Ranger, I mean, like, that's four mana, and then next turn, you know.
You're probably chomping with it, and then...
Yeah. Well, you would never try to main deck Ranger, though, I think.
Oh, no, for sure.
Yeah, so Hazoret is... I don't know if it's really main deckable, but Jerry seems to think so.
Yeah. Well, he's rarely wrong. I mean, he's a good Magic player.
Yeah,
he has gone off the wall and done some crazy things.
Yeah, well,
sometimes.
You know, it's worth exploring. It's definitely sure. one of those lists that's worth exploring. You know, I thought Snapcaster Mage in the deck was worth exploring until I tried it, and then it wasn't. But like, you don't know that till you try it.
Right.
I do think I can't imagine not having Teemer Battle Rage in the deck. Like having that Grixis Twin Element of just being able to combo them out from nowhere, kind of not exactly, but almost.
Right.
Really helps you in such a wide varying metagames that you see in Modern. That's the one thing that, you know, much respect to Spickelmeyer and Anderson. They've done well with the deck, but I really don't understand not playing Team of Battle Rage. I think it's just too good.
Well, it's such a house. I mean, like, you play the first one, and at that point, you kind of win game one. But game two, I mean, if you keep them in and your opponent thinks that you're keeping them in, they have to play around it, right?
Yes.
Like, they are just like, all of my dudes here.
Watching them play around
yeah.
it, yeah.
You get a lot of value. It can be a 2-for-1, though. Like, if you're playing against like a grindy matchup,
yeah, you
set
it out in the grindy
them.
Matchups. Yeah. Like, I mean, like you would do with Grixis Twin back in the day. Even
right.
Blue-Red Twin, you sided out your Splitter Twins.
Right.
Against Jund. Yeah, you don't want to get 2-for-1s, but, like, in the matchups where it's good, it's just so good.
Right.
It's just incredible. And it's also, I think Magnus Lanto made this point somewhere, that Teemer Battle Rage is also... much better game one than it is games two and three because they're going to have more removal for you games two and three.
That makes sense.
Like people sideboard into cards that are good against you no matter what you're playing. And so your game plan is going to be disrupted more no matter what you're doing. This is just sort of, you know, iron law of magic. Games two and three are more like sealed. Game one's more like draft. So Teemer Battle Rage game one is insane. So if you're going to play the card.
Might as well play a main board.
Might as well play a main board. Now, if a bunch of people are playing grindy decks, like if you're going to play against Obzon, like three out of six rounds or something.
Yeah,
like,
maybe you just don't.
Okay, maybe you don't. But, like,
you can't.
I don't
that.
Think that's the world we live in right now.
I would argue that it's probably not. I like, looking at, if you just go to, like, I don't know, depending on what you use for your metagame analysis, I generally tend to use, like, Goldfish or something like that to get a just rough idea of what people are playing. The top deck, Jeskai Tempo, you might not want TBR against, but if they tap out for a Geist, and like, you can maybe get them.
Yeah, you can
fine.
Occasionally get them.
But, like, Storm, Humans, Tron, Affinity, Burn... The Grixis Death Shadowless you may not want it against, but like Eldrazi Tron, yeah, every one of these decks you would want TBR against to just get them dead as quickly as possible. They all seem, it seems great, honestly.
It's just such a mid-range deck with an attitude. Like, if I were to throw a slogan onto this deck, it feels like
it's like, here's everything that's really good about Jund, and then we're also going to play some of these pieces that, like, I don't need to build a board state for. Like, it's really just like, I'm going to let you play Magic, I'm going to let you deal with my stuff, and then when you're done doing your thing and beating me down a little bit, now you're forced to deal with an 8-8.
Yeah. Sometimes just casting an 8-8, that's all you need.
There's a lot of weird, like, this deck being a thing and playing against it has really kind of made me rethink combat math, because you're kind of thinking, like, do I want to start, like, beating them down? Maybe not. Maybe I'd want this game to go longer and, like, try to keep them off shadow, make them find something to where, like, maybe you don't have the answer to deal with the shadow, and they're, like, 15. You don't want to attack with Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah, I've actually, I found I've gotten a lot of value out of people not attacking when they should, because they're rethinking that, and which you should rethink. There are a lot of spots where you shouldn't attack the shadow player, but, like, oftentimes, the hardest card to beat in most shadow decks, including the five-color deck, is Lingering Souls. And if they just, like, straight attack you a couple of times with it, you're probably just dead a lot of the times. But they'll sit back and chump your, like, 5/5 or whatever instead of killing you. and so then you get to grind through it. Like, sure, you gained, like, 20 life or whatever, but that's better than me dying. And so you'll see people doing that. Or, like, burn players sometimes having a second thought, like, sometimes I don't have the shadow. Sometimes what you're doing just is giving me time.
Yeah. I mean, like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like if the shadow player is going slow, maybe you should too. Like, really evaluate what you have in hand and make sure that it's good in the grind later on. Because if he's going fast, you should probably go fast as well.
I think it's pretty contextual. So, like, against Burn should have... so Burn really has a specific game plan against shadow, and that's get him to, like, 13... maybe 10, and then sit there.
Yeah.
And don't do anything else until you can kill them, like, spew off some burn in a turn, untap, kill them. That's usually the plan for burn. So it really doesn't matter how fast or slow Shadow's going, except for insofar as how fast do you get them to 13 or so.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Is that your magic number? I mean, like...
Well, 13 is a magic number for Death Shadow, okay, right? Because you don't want to give them, like, a 10-10 Death Shadow and let them kill you out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, so you're sort of managing your opponent's Death Shadow at that point. Like, yeah, you can have a 3-3. You can have a Wild Nakato. I have those two, right? And then you're trying to set up to where, like, they overload whatever counter magic they have in order to kill them.
Because you don't play that much counter magic. Two stubs in the main, is that it?
Yeah, two or three stubs. Maybe four you'll see in five color or Grixis.
If they're really aggressive. Yeah. Sure.
And most shadow lists don't have another counter spell to bring in. They could play Flash Freeze. If the big mana deck of choice is Valakut and maybe Amulet and no one's playing Tron, Flash Freeze is an option.
Sure.
But usually not.
Yeah. So yeah, that's oftentimes how, like, Burn would try to do against any control deck I play with Cryptic Man. They just sit there and amass, like, six or seven cards in hand, then just go in a turn, bolt you, Boros Charm you.
Yeah, Cryptic Command's really clunky against that.
Yeah, it's trading one mana for four mana is just not good. And, like, Stubborn Owl is great, but you usually don't have that many of them. So they try to get you low-ish, and then they go, oh, I have, like, 16 points of burn. Fire off the instant speed ones. Did you counter any of them? That's fine, because then we'll just keep going.
I often find that against Burn, you get up to a spot where it's like, well, if they have, like, exactly three lightning bolts in their hand, I'm dead. But if any of the spells in their hand cost two mana, I can kill them. Like, this comes up all the time. And whether that's, like, through stub, like, maybe I'm at six and they need three lightning bolts because I'm going to stub one of them, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So a lot of interesting situations. Force Spike is apparently good enough sometimes.
Sometimes you can with Force Spike. Sometimes it's right to just blow a stub on whatever early against Burn.
Yeah.
Just to, like, use your mana efficiently.
Yeah. No, I've done that before. Just Spell Pierce something as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
It's fine. Not Spell Pierce, but, you know, Force Spike it. Whatever. Right.
Good enough.
Yeah.
One mana removal.
Just counter it. Yeah. Just counter it. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that, like, any decks you'd love to see? Like, what does this deck, like, prey on?
Non-interactive combo decks.
Storm
Ad Nauseam, probably Goryeo's Vengeance, just anything along those lines, like stack based combo decks.
Right.
Especially stack based combo decks that inexplicably play creatures.
Yeah. Well, it turns out sometimes you have to. Unless you're Ad Nauseam,
still
a bad matchup.
If Legacy Storm was, like, a thing that was going on, or, like, Power Advances Ascension is about as close as we got to that, you probably wouldn't be as good against that style of deck.
Yeah, I don't know, because the thing about the Storm deck is that the creatures are what allows it to play Gifts Ungiven, and Gifts Ungiven is what allows it to, like, kill you out of nowhere when you think you have them down to, like, a Pyretic Ritual in hand and nothing else.
Right.
So it's possible we'd even be better against the Pyromancer's Ascension version of Storm.
That's true.
If it existed, because then they don't have this Gifts line. It's really weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, Spectre-based combo decks. Some of the big mana decks are good matchups. It depends on what exactly they're playing. If they want to play stuff that's specifically hateful for you, they can make it even, maybe even slightly favored for them. Depends. And then stuff, aggressive decks that aren't like too hard for you to interact with are good matchups. So like Affinity is a good matchup just because all the removal is insane and you have like Lingering Souls post board and like it's just a nightmare for them. They can get you sometimes with Rest in Peace, for example. I think Burn's a good matchup. I'm not sure if there's anything they can do to really change that. I think Merfolk's a good matchup.
Are they still bringing in Path? Burnstall? I mean, not that...
I've seen Path, I've seen Deflecting Palm, I've seen a lot of things.
It feels like it should be okay for Burn, but you've not had that experience?
I mean, it's not awful for them, but it feels like 60.
But I mean, like, Collective Brutality. Like, we're in game two, they're bringing in Path, right? Sure. You're bringing in Collective Brutality.
Yeah, I'm bringing in Collective Brutality. I'm bringing in Collective Brutality and, like, some counter magic.
Sure.
It's awkward. Okay. I mean, if Burn becomes more of a thing, you would probably put more slots in your sideboard that incidentally can come in against Burn, because right now there's really only three. And the fourth one is a sweeper in case they get like three Swiss Spears going or something.
Yeah. those draws are hard to beat.
But sometimes you just cast K Return or Radiant Flames and they're in trouble.
That's very good.
Casting Boros Charm for the bad mode.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, no, they do just cast it for the regular and just get the prowess trigger.
But yeah,
you know, whatever.
Swiss Spear.
The coming decks, I assume it's like okay.
There's a wide range. Yeah. Like the Counters Company's decks, they're going all in on combos. They're pretty good because their beaters are terrible.
Yeah.
But you know, the company decks can grind as hard as they want to if they have four Kitchen Finks, four Eternal Witness, four Knight of the Reliquary, and maybe four Spellqueller. So I'm basically naming Bant Company here.
They're playing Bant Company.
So if they're playing Bant Company, it gets harder. I mean, there's probably Obzon builds that are harder too. They play a pile of Voices.
Could you beat Infinite Life? Probably not. No, definitely can't.
No, it can't beat Infinite Life.
Yeah, so yeah,
if they go to like a million life, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah, that's fine.
You still ask them though. What number are you going to?
Yeah, I ask them and then I evaluate.
Oh, you're going to go into 100? All right, here we go.
A 12-12 does a lot of damage.
No, it does.
A 12-12 with Teemer Battle Rage.
Yeah, you only get to Teemer Battle Rage twice though. No, it's probably still hard to beat though.
I mean, like, as we evaluate the meta, like, we have to understand that Regionals was like a very, it was a place that could accelerate this deck due to the matchups and, like, the place that it was in. And I think we're going to see more of this deck as we go, just because of how the rest of the meta is adapting to everything else but Five Color Shadow.
Right. They're adapting the humans right now, because that's the next big hot thing. Also, I think Five Color Shadow is a little harder to play than the Grixis version. Like, people who have been playing Snapcaster Mage decks can pick up Grixis and learn the play patterns pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Five colors a little trickier, I think. So I think it's a bigger, steeper learning curve.
It's the whole bauble. Like,
there's some things that are, like, pretty unintuitive.
Yeah, yeah. Bauble's got a lot of weird tricks.
Yeah, well, okay, so I'm like, I have Street Wraith, Fetchland, Bauble in hand. Like, when do I peek? When do I draw? And sometimes you're just like, I'm going to play this land, fetch Shock, for no value. Like, I don't even have like a turn one play other than Bauble Street Wraith. And I'm just like filtering my draws, putting everything.
Oh, you Bauble first there.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, yeah, yeah.
Bauble first, peak.
Yeah. But sometimes you want to, depending on maybe you know the matchup, sometimes you Bauble them first so you know you want to take their discard spell. Like, it depends on if you value the selection. Yeah. It's a lot of really close calls and stuff like that. And also, the deck is probably more expensive. Tarmogoyf's expensive. You're playing a five color mana base.
Yeah.
That might have some influence.
Can you guess how many times I've bought Tarmogoyf?
Two.
Zero?
No, like copies of.
Oh, copies of?
Yeah.
Six.
It's either zero or eight.
12.
Oh! Oh,
so, yeah, so when I...
I'm on eight.
Yeah.
I stuck with four.
I just got to this weird point where I was like, I really love this card. I don't really want to play Jund, but I like Jund as like an archetype, like this mid-range, yada yada. Playing Amulet Bloom and then going into Burn, I was forced with this weird like, well, I just want to collect cards because I'm beating, you know, these like players who have running like suboptimal decks, like, you know.
Got to use that store credit.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to spend it. And I'm like, well, how many Tarmogoyfs can I just amass? The magic number is 12.
Big baller.
That's a lot of goys.
Yeah.
It's so a lot of goys.
You're the reason they spike. No, I'm just kidding.
Now they're only like $50. But
yeah, no, they're not too bad now. If you wanted to buy this deck, like, it's not like it used to be.
Remember when Goyce were 200?
Oh, I remember. I bought my Goyce like 120, and I was like, oh man, like they're gonna go up. I feel like I don't care, but like I got my Goyce, I was done with it, and now they're like 50, and I'm sitting here going, everybody has Tarma Goyce, I'm not cool anymore.
Bobble was also an expensive one, but it just got reprinted.
So spoiler alert, I just bought like most of the set list today. Because I had the lands on me anyway.
And you have 12 Tarma Goyce.
I have four.
Traded
eight of them away.
How do you think you got the rest of the deck?
No, for real. But yeah, I just got to this point where I was just like, I think that this deck is very interactive. I think that there are a lot of lines to play, much like Storm. And like as you know, this meta develops, I don't think Storm is the place that you want to be. And maybe that's my saltiness from going 0-3 at the regional recent NRG event.
What shout out to Derek, he top eighted it, right?
Took third
playing. Was he playing my exact regional 75 or was he
very close? He sent us his 75, his like updated 75 or whatever. I don't think it's quite the same as yours, but it is very, very close.
Are these going to be posted with the podcast in the show notes?
We can
go ahead and update that.
I have my most recent experimental list that
wasn't playing Hezeret. And I don't know how many copies of Lingering Souls he had, and he wasn't playing a basic forest.
Three souls, one P and K in the board.
He was doing the P and K.
He only had two Lily's main deck. Looks like he was a little heavier on stub.
That's like a lot of people wanted to cut a Lily for a stub, and like I can kind of see it. But this is something again. Shout out to Lewis Kaplan. He thinks that a big strength of the deck is just like pile of discard spells and a Liliana the Veil, and I couldn't agree more. You rip their hand apart and then you stick Lillian, like it doesn't matter what you're playing against.
Right. You just have that early game pressure.
Yeah.
And she grinds it out for you. That's what she does.
Yeah, no, I love Liliana the Veil. It's well known. But yeah, basically keeping your opponent off anything relevant. The cool thing is like you can kinda take what you're going to have a problem with discard spells, which has always kind of been the case. But let's say you just have one threat and you just take their one removal spell. Mm-hmm. You just cleared the way. Or like maybe you don't have much removal, but they have some threats. Then you just take their threats. And it's like
my favorite such a great is on the play against Grixis Shadow, and you like IOK them or even Thoughtseize them, and you see a hand that's like some lands and like a Snapcaster Mage and like a Thought Scour and a couple of Delve creatures. And you take the Thought Scout.
They can work for it.
They're doing nothing for so long. Yeah. You're just like, I'm going to attack you with this Tarmogoyf.
They just have to find something, and it's not always that
I've
easy.
Been on the other side of that. It's not fun.
Yeah, it doesn't seem great. How many times have you hard cast Street Wraith?
A few.
More often than
I definitely, in the NRG qualifier, the 2 weeks before the regionals, I did it against Esper Shadow. Like, I hard cast it, and he's just like, looked like he's looking around the table, like looking at me, like just like evaluating everything. You could just see it in his eyes, like, I'm going to lose to this card.
Yeah. Why does he have Swamp
Water? I don't have Path to Exile.
But he passed it, and then, you know, does some things, goes to my turn, and I cast another one.
Why does it have Swamp Walk? I don't understand.
Oh my God, it's so good. It's so amazing.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet, though. That's pretty sweet. And you were playing the 5-color list then?
Yeah. I played the same list as the regional 75.
Right on.
That was
right
2 weeks before regionals.
Right on. I dig it. Is there anything you would are you gonna like? What's the next step of this deck?
So experimenting with the main deck Lingering Souls, I think. Experimenting with that last the grindy slot, the traverse target being either should it be Hazard or should it be Ranger? I don't think it should be P and K, but it's possible it could be Ranger. Mm-hmm. And I've also been, since so many people are playing Field of Ruin of Ghost Quarter, cut the second Overgrown Tomb for a forest specifically. And so that makes you a little bit stronger against those things and also against Blood Moon because you can traverse up for your forest plus swamp. And then they can resolve Blood Moon and you can decay it later, which is a nice thing to have.
Yeah. You can still even cast Tarmogoyf through.
Yeah, you can cast,
and that's nice.
You can cast most of your deck through that, which is nice. It's still fundamentally a black-green deck and you can cast your red spells easily, right?
Right.
The only spot, like the one Ghost Quarter deck where that's not what you actually want to be doing is Eldrazi Tron, because a redundant blue source is typically better.
Sure.
So like having a Breeding Pool in addition to the Watery Grave so you can keep your counter Magic Online. But I don't know, if anyone's been on Magic Online lately, it's just every league I run into at least one of these control decks with Field of Ruin and Ghost Quarter and Spreading Seas, and just like, oh, yeah, just you got it, man. I don't even know what you're going to kill me with, whether it's that Colonnade or Gideon of the Trials. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, the trials, good God.
Yeah, but there's a lot of room for experimentation still. I'll be taking some variant of this most likely to Grand Prix Oklahoma City, so I'm going to try some things.
I think we're going to have a decent Columbia turnout headed to that. Everybody's all, like, every week, every time we play, everyone's like, who's going? Who's going? Yeah. Who can I ride with? Like, and I'm excited. I'm excited to, I think we'll do a podcast at the Grand Prix. Maybe like the day before and then a second part two after day one, just to see where everybody's at. If anybody makes day two, I think it'll be a great retrospective on,
that'd be sweet.
On our play.
Yeah,
so
be cool. One question from Micah, who's not here. He wants to know, are we doing Russian or German team or battle rages?
Oh, my team or battle rages are Russian.
Yeah, as they should be. Russian to victory. so
get out.
Not by choice, to be honest.
just what you had.
Yeah, well, what someone who I knew had when I traded for them.
Right, right. Fair enough. Anything else, Peter?
No, I think that wraps it up very well.
No, Matt, we want to thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, we were super excited to get you on. Even before you doing so well at regionals, like, this deck is kind of a monstrosity, at least in our, you know, local meta. And then just to see it accelerate and further adapt to the meta has been great. So
yeah,
it's really cool. Well,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, of absolutely. Course. This has been Dead on Board episode 6.
You want to do any shout outs? Any like tweets and stuff and who we are, what we do? How, if people want to get a hold of Matt.
Oh yeah, a Twitter handle.
Oh,
you don't have to.
No, I have a public. I created a Twitter account. I deleted my Twitter account a while ago, and then after I wrote my article and people liked it, I created a new one just for you guys. So I'm at the Spooly, Spooly. So right, the Spooly is also my Reddit username.
Right on.
We will have an outlink down below.
Yeah.
Of course, people could just search my.
Well, yeah, people. Magic. Yeah, I've gotten a lot of questions on Reddit in the thread for the article. So. Yeah, I'm fine if you want to DM me on there, too.
Right yeah, absolutely. Right. We'll have all that information readily available, including our Dead on Board WordPress website where you can find the article that you wrote, Mr. Simpson.
Still there.
Going into great detail. 27 pages? 24 pages of detail.
I had to get it all out of my head.
Yeah, I don't blame you, dude.
It's a lot of things going to... He's much better than I. You're much better than me because, like, I can't remember who I played last week. I'm just like, I played Magic, but, like, I don't know what I did.
I did it. I sat down, like, the 2 days or one day after the event and, like, went through my notes and, like, tried to reconstruct. Like, I can't... couldn't remember much of it today.
No, it's
gone now. Things happened.
I had a lot of trouble finishing my tournament report for the Legacy Winamox. I was like going back through my notes, and I was like, "Oh, I remember this one. It's because where I sword supply shares of Merit Lage." You remember like adding 20 to your opponent's life total? You're like, "I know exactly what I did there." So, but most of my tournament report notes are just like scribbles on a notepad that don't mean anything.
Oh yeah, so I'm the same. But you can find us. Dead on Board is MTG Twitter.
We're at Dead on Board underscores in between all the words. So right. Dead underscore on underscore board. Peter, where can they find you?
I am at MindSlump on Twitter. You can also reach us through our Facebook account, Dead on Board. We're all admins on that website, so
yeah.
You know, we can get personal.
Really want to add us? You could add me on Facebook. I don't know if that'll do a whole lot, but you could. Yeah, Peter too, I guess.
Yeah.
You could find me at I'm still at Austin underscore P underscore Baker. I do own the account at Jundboy with an I. I do own the account. I haven't done anything with it.
Well, now you're gonna have to. It's too good not to.
I know.
When in doubt, Jund them.
Yeah. When just Jund them out. Which although I'm not doing that right now.
Yeah.
It's not
really sooner than later.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be good soon. I kind of halfway doubt it. But
if people play humans.
I guess it is good against humans. It's just so bad against like Tron and Balakid. It's just such a disaster.
I think it was a good choice for the RPTQ this weekend. But
really?
Yeah. Humans was the most played deck.
Really?
In a lot of the RPTQs. Surprising. Yeah.
A lot of people around here have been saying that deck is such a trap, and I don't know. It seems pretty good to me. Like, it's just fundamentally, it's not a Coco deck, but like it works kind of like the same way.
Yeah. Some of them do play Coco, but most don't. Most are on the Bioplane.
Yeah. It just seems like a good choice. So, but now, yeah, you can just kill people playing humans. Old school Jund, 4 Lightning Bolts, get in the sleeve.
Absolutely. I don't know. Like, I really like the new Goblin Rabble Master just because that card is such a troll.
Get him dead.
Yeah. To be fair, for playing against humans, I want Olivia Volder.
Hey, bring her back. Yeah. Bring her back.
Oh, yeah. No bolts? Sure. I'll play Olivia on turn 4. That's fine. Maybe I should sleeve that up. I have it all, I think.
We'll see.
Yeah, maybe.
Today's Monday. We have Wednesday play. There aren't any more constructed competitive events here for a while. But then we have OKC coming up. So
yeah, be prepping for that and probably releasing content and talking about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the big GP. So.
Well, this has been episode 6 of Dad on Board. My name is Peter Chapani, here with Austin Baker.
Hey, I'll see you later.
And Mr. Matt Simpson.
Yo.